the Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, Nina buys the metric cord on GH, Michael sets a trap for Ashland on YNR, Lee dies on B&B, and the truth comes out on Days for Lucas, and Beyond Salem airs. Stay tuned. Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Hello, Lucas.
Jillian Bowe, welcome.
Hello.
For the listeners, please forgive me. I'm suffering from a cold, so there may be some extra coughing on this episode. Let's dive in.
You got the COVID.
No, I actually took the test and I don't, but I've apparently have caught the summer cold twice in like
six weeks. Check which COVID test you taking. That shit that they give you at home.
I have the COVID test that you get from the post office, and I've got
no. Get the PCR. Just get the PCR.
Needless to say, let's talk a little bit about The Bold and the Beautiful. Josh, last week,
yes,
we were talking about Sheila, and Finn. What did you think of how that played out, and what happened with Lee?
I think B&B is bucking for a directing Emmy, because those scenes were really well done with Lee in the car and Sheila going after her, and then Lee appears to have died, and I'm gonna say it like that because we ain't got no word that Naomi Matsuda is out, in a fiery crash. Her car went off and kaboom, and Sheila just stood there just grinning like the cat who ate the canary.
Or as some of my people would say, a Cheshire cat.
Like the Cheshire cat, yeah.
Yes.
I think the Sheila component is very good, because she has almost eliminated Lee from the conversation when Finn wakes up. I like all of that. I think that her sort of taking credit for saving Finn's life and getting really irritated that he's not quite grateful enough. And on Thursday and Friday's episode, she reverted to really talking to him like, and I think I said this in the last podcast too, very much Kathy Bates in Misery, very much, very childlike. You're being a bad boy. You're being ungrateful. And then at the end of Friday's episode, when she goes to inject him with the drug to put him to sleep, and she just pets him on the head. I just thought it's just eerie. It's classic Sheila. It's very, very good. She got very loud at times, but Sheila is at her best to me when she gets quiet, when she gets icy quiet. I think it's very, very good.
Why are you whispering like Sheila coming for you?
I know, right?
She's coming. She's a coming.
Now, the Finn side of it, there was some scenery chewing there. There was some over the top.
The text I got from you was more descriptive than scenery chewing.
I mean, the issue was is that when Finn was just acting with his eye, when Finn was just sort of emoting with his eyes, I thought it was really good. And then he started speaking, and I didn't think it was quite so good. He's unhinged his jaw and inhaled that entire
commercials.
Set. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. He liberty, liberty, liberty.
Right.
Sounds now, like bravo, bravo, bravo. Sorry. Liberty, liberty, liberty. I just thought, maybe the walking and the talking, not so good. But the eyes are good. I'm glad he's asleep.
Now, Jillian, the reason why I use Lee as the headline is because you had wanted to touch on her and you haven't been on the podcast for a few weeks. So take it away.
I do wonder what's happening with Lee. We haven't heard them say they found her body or anything like that. It is kind of disjointed. It seems like that's the Bold and the Beautiful motto, but it's giving you a little bit of a hint, because if you think back when Finn was quote unquote dead, everybody was like, well, when was the funeral? Like, how come we didn't see this and that? And that's what started to tip people off. So maybe is it round two or something? Is Lee stuck somewhere? Like, who knows? Like, I don't know. And Bold hasn't said anything yet. Maybe they're going to have Lee come back and haunt Sheila. But, Sheila, we already know. Even if somebody haunts Sheila, Sheila going to whoop the haunted person's ass, because that's just how Sheila is. This is now giving this whole thing is giving Misery. I was like, I see you, you know, you Bells, love your classic movies. Hey, Maria, girl. It is giving Misery, but instead of it being like an obsessed fan, it's an obsessed mother trying to, you know, Sheila isn't acting childlike for me. I feel as though Sheila is acting like Finn is a child.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
She's trying to, you know, make up for lost time. So she's not coming to him on an adult level because she knows at an adult level, Finn is not going to buy the bullshit. So she's going to try to use the mommy voice to try to manipulate. And Finn is still not buying her bullshit. Now, I did have a moment. I'm like, you are just saying things in your mind and stuff with Sheila. How are you still chewing scenery, child? Like, I don't get it. But I'm really liking this because this is a really good cat and mouse game that they're playing. And this goes back to when Steffi tried to warn you. Everybody and under the sun tried to warn you that Sheila is a batshit crazy person. And you kept poking and poking and poking and until you finally made that bubble pop and you see what they tried to tell you. Like, Steffi didn't even file her marriage license because you're so obsessed with Sheila. And this should be a caution for Hope, dumbass, too. Because Hope was all, well, he has the right. I'm like, I like that they have Hope as like the sainted person, the voice of reason. But Hope, though, but like I said, they've dumbed Hope down. Hope shouldn't be this stupid. The bitch shot your mama, too. So you should not want Finn to know Sheila either, you fool. But I digress. But I like the cat and mouse game, and I do wonder if Lee is going to come in at the last minute to, like, you know, it'll be Sheila's Waterloo, if you will. She will come in at the last minute to be, like, to kind of back Finn up and say, well, this is what the bitch did to me too, child. You know, she ran me off the road. You know, fucking with you Foresters will get you killed. Hey, Thomas, remember Emma? She sends her regards, something.
Last week, Josh, you mentioned that you were seeing chemistry between Deacon and Taylor. Jillian, what are you thinking of those developments?
This is a very interesting development because I like the fact that, you know, they have like a, they're kind of being, they're commiserating over the other person's, who they fell in love with. I just want it to be a slow burn. I don't want it to go fast. A slow burn with these two would be very interesting, to say the least. And it also makes me wonder, you know, Taylor shrinks the hell out of everyone but her own self. What does it say that you're going after Brooke's leftovers? You the cleanup woman. She the cleanup woman. Betty Wright wrote a song about it. You the cleanup woman, ho. Like, what does that say? And I also wonder what her kids are going to say. And I also want to know if Deacon, remember, that secret about Thomas knowing about what Sheila did is still sitting out there. I wonder how that's going to play into this. Will Deacon and Taylor fall in love and he finds out and he's just like, he uses that trump card to bust Ridge and Brooke up and get Brooke for himself? Or will he keep it to himself and disappoint Hope because he's keeping a secret? You know, you don't return your library book on time. Hope disappointed. I'm so ready for someone to be like, shut up, girl. But that secret is still out there. So how is that going to play? And, like, you know, Thomas is cuckoo. Will Deacon be able to, when Thomas tries to do his shenanigans, just come in there and stop being a punk like how Ridge is, if comes in there and just shuts Thomas down and says, enough. Your parents aren't getting back together. Man up. Or, you know, when Thomas tries to manipulate Hope, he could be right there and be like, my daughter is married. You need to respect that. You talk about Brooke not respecting that. Respect my daughter is mad. Like, I just, yeah, I'm liking that. I just see so many possibilities, but they need to make it a slow, good build.
Speaking of manipulations, Josh, Michael and Diane sort of worked together against Ashlyn this last week on The Young and the Restless. What did you think of that, all how that all played out? Because he went, Ashlyn originally went to Victor to try and get access to his former child one
not
last time.
Not his former child. I hate when you say that. To get to Harrison. That's still his child. That's this child.
Before he leaves town and Victor was not having any of it. What did you think of how that all played out?
Okay, so I like Diane and Michael working together. I like, you know, Susan Walters is just at every week. It can't be said enough. She is saving the show.
I wouldn't say all that now, but.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's just nothing else interesting on this show. So I think to me, anything that she's in is good. And I think I like her and Michael together because it gives her a talk to, I like that they plotted. I like all that. The only thing is that I thought that, I don't know what anybody else thought, but I think it's Friday's episode when they all catch Harrison with, I mean, they all catch Ashlyn with Harrison. To me, Kyle looked like the one who was like kind of bending. Like, I think in the look that Michael Melor was giving to me was Kyle thinks that maybe Ashlyn should be able to see Harrison at least one last time, while Victor's sitting there, oh, you will not do it, my family. You will not, do all.
That's my issue with that. That's Kyle's child.
I know. I just don't know that it plays right.
He should tell, like, let's just say that he is having reservations. He should check Victor. He should say, Victor, I got this. This is my son. But, you know, whatever.
It was Summer that played the go-between, right? Victor went to Summer, and Summer convinced Kyle to put the restraining order or the order of protection on Harrison to keep Ashlyn away. But if Kyle loves Harrison, and he does, he would want what's best for Harrison, and Harrison thinks of Ashlyn as a father. So he would want him to see him, and not, Kyle would not manipulate Harrison the way that Victor manipulates his children.
Right. And see, this whole Jack and Victor being, you know, at a truce and like they barely have scenes. I'm like, what is up with that? Y'all have ever noticed that they have a handful of scenes?
Oh, not on at all. Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this would be the moment that Jack should step in and say, look, we don't want him around. We all agree Ashlyn don't need to be around him, but Jack should be there to tell him, you need to drive home to Victor that the only Newman that should be his concern and really shouldn't is Summer. Harrison is not his child or his grandchild, and that's your responsibility. Don't let him do what he did to his other kids. Like you would think that
I agree.
Jack should be, I don't, like, they're missing the beats there.
Jack should be pissed that Victor has manipulated his family.
He
should be pissed.
Jack should be, well, you know, Jack was in agreement about Ashlyn. It just annoys me that, but I will say this. This has been happening a long time before this regime. They act as though that Nick was only Jack's stepchild and not Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
They need to remind people that they both were, and that Jack should be pissed about what he did to Victoria. And he should be on the same side as Victor, but he should tell Jack, Jack should tell Kyle, don't let Victor run the show. Don't let him control that. He did that with your mother and me when you were involved. I'm not about to have history repeat itself. Cut the shit. And he needs to tell Victor, thanks, but the Abbots can take it from here. Stand down. You overstepping. Summer is my grandchild. Yeah, but Harrison is mine. They need to go there with that. But to back up with Diane and Michael... Michael irks me because the fact that your client came to you, which was Nikki, and told you, I want you to get dirt on her. You break that shit and go to her and tell her. That's some fucked up shit. Nikki should have his ass fired. Nikki should really go in on his ass. But they're missing, like, it's like they don't want the drama. It's drama there. So stupid.
Nikki sure enough reminded Michael that he was the hired help when he tried to defend Diane to her.
Shout, that's my girl. Put
Listen,
you in your place.
Nikki, when it comes to Diane, is going to remind everybody at every opportunity.
But that's the part that annoys me with Michael. It's like, Michael is like, people could change. The bitch did not change. She got found out. She got manipulative so she could see Kyle. She didn't do all this out of the goodness of her heart. She didn't clear Nikki. Like, are you insane? Nikki should drive home that point every day. But for some reason, they don't like conflict at this show or drama. If it is conflict and drama, it's basic. Like, I think we are setting up for something with Adam and Victoria. Like, Adam made a good sacrifice. Seems as though, spoiler alert, Adam's making the sacrifice so Sally could still have her, you know, have a leg in the corporate role. He, like, gives her the kiss off. I feel as though this is, like, going to blow up in Victoria's face because people keep trying to lump all the Newmans in. You got to get fair where fair is. When Victoria stepped down, Victor was like, I want you to be CEO. Nikki was like, hell no, I ain't gonna be CEO. And she told him, you need to make Adam CEO. Nikki gave him that idea. It wasn't Victor. It was Nikki who gave him that idea. Fast forward, when she came back, Nikki and Nick said, this is really gonna be fucked up for Adam. Like, they felt bad for Adam. Victoria blew it off. So whatever happens between her and Adam now, that should fall on Victoria. It shouldn't fall on them. Nick has still said, I don't think, you know, we're all getting jobs. Like, what's going to happen to Adam? I don't think that's fair. She's still blowing him off. Nikki feels bad and has said something. Victor has blown him off. And he does if he wants to be in this family and loyal to this family, he'll stick around.
Like, that was awful. That was even cruel for Victor. And I thought he was gaslighting him. And then with tears in his eyes, I'm like, what the hell am I watching? Adam spent the better part of the year defending Victoria, working with Victor for Ashlyn. And he just, ooh.
Right. So I feel as though when this shit hits the fan, Nikki and Nick need to say to them, we told y'all not to play this dude, like, not to do him like that. Because when Victoria was dickmatized by him, it was, and decided to, you know, when she tried to make it look that way, it was Nikki who was like, no, let's put Adam in the driver's seat. And, you know, we'll keep a watchful eye, but it's his turn to be in the catbird seat. My thing is, you know, they like to borrow from things, at least borrow from Empire, how Lucius was trying to be King Lear and have, isn't it King? Yeah, it's King Lear.
Yeah.
He tried to have them kids fight it. Victor is the OG at that. Lee Daniels really should tell them, guys, like, hello, I kind of watch the soaps to do this. I mean, because Lee Daniels is a soap head. He was all my children fan, but it's clear that they've borrowed elements from soaps. You would think that they would return the favor and say, okay, let's do a kind of like, let's take a page from Empire's book. Have Victor as Lucius and have those kids, all of them working there. He should have, Nikki really should step down and run New Hope. Like, nobody wants to run New Hope. Spoiler alert, Noah don't want to run it. Nick's going to be, you know, co-CEO. That's where you put Adam as COO. You should have, Nikki should say, you know what? I don't want to do this. It's time for the kids to do this. This is the kids' legacy. I'm good. No, my baby. No, it's good. You know, the kids need to do it. And that includes Adam. They don't even mention Abby's goofy ass at all.
No, not even a word.
No.
You know, maybe she should be, you know, overseeing Sally over at Newman Media to balance it out. You have the three older ones, Victoria, Nick, and Adam running the mothership, and Abby running Newman Media. Hello.
You can bring up her naked heiress background. She knows what makes traction and what makes news. And her baby father, even though she don't want to claim that's her baby father, her baby father is Devon Hamilton Winters. Like, come on. Like, it writes itself that it can be drama for, it can be drama making. This show is The Young and the Restless. Like, we're the young folk to make it restless. Come on.
Before we go on to General Hospital, I want to follow up on something that we discussed last week, which was the, Victoria suddenly being the all-powerful, all-smart. In the comments on last week's episode, several listeners asked why it was that we were not happy about Victoria being smart, because that's what we've been begging for a very long time.
Oh, and they mean y'all. They don't mean right. me. Okay, got right. it. Okay, they mean y'all.
Mm-hmm. And to be put quite simply, the reason why we weren't happy about because...
You name names. Name names. Don't say we, because I'm on here.
What I'm referring to by we is those of us who were on the podcast last week. Okay. The reason why we were not happy about it is because it came out of the blue. What we have been begging for with Victoria for many years is that she be written as intelligently and as dynamically as possible, so that when she pulls off power moves, they make sense. And what she did by suddenly out of the blue with no backup in it, and it all being supposed fill-in, as Josh pointed out, they didn't give us any basis for this smarts. They just pushed it in there, and that was it. There was no build-up.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that. I will say this. At least you would have had a few breadcrumbs, maybe right. one or two, but I disagree with this coming out of nowhere. They're pulling a Victor. However, I don't know if it's directing. I don't know if it's acting. Both, but it wasn't articulated that way. But I will say this. You did start to see a little something when Victoria started telling Nick certain things. I said to myself, at first I was like, bitch, are you really going to fuck up your family's legacy? And then I said, no. This girl is too loyal to Newman and her father. I had a feeling something was up. But see, here's the thing with you people. Y'all want the element of surprise. That's what they gave to y'all. Y'all want the old school flavor. They're giving you some of the old school flavor, because under Bill Bell, Victor would have done this shit. You would have thought Victor was going left, and then he turns right and you're like, what the fuck? It's brilliant.
I don't have any problem with that. And I'm with you on some of this. My issue is that they told it in flashbacks.
Right.
Why did they need to tell it in flashbacks?
Why didn't we see it built?
I feel as though they did kind of give you a building of it when she kept trying to tell her family she knew what she was doing and to, you know, give her some space. And Victor kept coddling her, and then she had to do something dramatic to make her family think one thing and to make Ashlyn think one thing. I don't have a problem with it. I will give y'all this. They could have had they could have had two more breadcrumbs dropped for you to see it. I don't think we needed to be clued in at all.
Like a good carb, so we need more breadcrumbs on The Young and the Restless. Let's talk a little bit about General Hospital, where Nina buys the 50% of the MetroCourt that Carly once owned and used as leverage to buy the stock. She goes to Carly, tries to give it back to her, and Carly isn't having any of it. Jillian, what did you think? Because I was like, Carly, boy, you can't look a gift horse in the mouth.
Carly always cuts her nose off to spite her face. I want, when everything blows up on her, I want her to sit there and realize I am the making of my own misery.
She should have just sat there and ate her food.
Yes, because this all started when you decided to be a funky cat bitch about that annoying big mouth kid, Wiley. Nina was going to tell you about Sonny being alive, but you shot your fucking mouth off, and here we are. Once again, you've done it again. And Nina is actually trying to do you a solid.
Yeah, I'm not looking for Carly and her to bake cookies and to braid each other's hair. You fucked her man. Carly should never try to break. Carly, every time Carly see you, she should be like, bitch. But at the same time, Sonny should be like, takes one to know one, because he caught you trying to stoop Jason in his house, in his bed. I that drives me insane that is only seldomly brought up. They're making Carly like this innocent victim. But back to Nina. She's trying to do you a solid and make you a peace offering, and you keep acting like an ignorant dumbass. And I don't feel sorry for her. I feel as though Chris and Dan and Chris, they're trying to make us feel sorry for Carly. Nope, I don't feel sorry for Caroline Spencer, Benson, whatever she want to call herself today. I don't feel sorry for Carly. Carly always goes... She always lets emotions get the best of her. That's why she's in the predicament now. That's why Michael's in the predicament now that he's in. And, you know, with Drew Lavery,
that's Ryan another Lavery. One.
No, I said what I said, and I'm not changing it. Like, Carly deserves this. I don't feel sorry for Carly.
No.
When this all blows up in her face, I want for someone to sit down and tell her, you brought this on yourself. They don't have somebody to do that. Drew just indulges her every whim. And he annoys me.
Yeah.
This is no shade to Cameron Matheson at all. But, you know, we are in the seventh month of the year 2022. Cameron, I will give y'all a little sneaky peeky of who's on my best and worst list. Cameron's character, Drew Lavery, is on my worst list.
Oh,
because
yeah.
He's just, babe, just, I feel as though I'm going to have to call you out. Dan and Chris and Dan, you brought him on this fanfare and he does nothing. He's supposed to be so head over heels, wanting to get back to Port Charles for Sam. And Scout, we've only seen him around them a handful of times. Like, yeah, they tried to do the whole, he was fighting for Sam, but are you serious? You did not get your memory back because you didn't want to lose your memories of Sam. That's just, did y'all forget that? Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, they're trying to make him a Jason bot, but like a Jason bot who was like, a role like they're trying to make him a Jason Jax hybrid. You notice that?
Yeah, I can see that.
He's a Jason Jax hybrid. And no, like Drew, yeah, you suck at business. And you trying to make Olivia feel guilty for what happened with ELQ. I'm like, bitch, are you like, I was glad Olivia told him off, but then she needs to be told off too, because Olivia just always inserts herself into things that has nothing to do with her. Nina slept with Sonny. She didn't sleep with Ned. She slept with Sonny.
Mm-hmm.
So mind the bit. I know Carly is your girl, but I'm like, my God, someone needs to tell Olivia enough. And somebody's trying to bail you out. It's the devil you know with Nina. Nina's trying to help y'all out, because your next option, what if friggin' Valentine did it? Or worse, what if Victor bought that second half of your hotel? Or what if Bundles bought it? What if Mrs.
Josh,
Wu bought it?
And there was even a moment, I don't know if y'all noticed it, when Nina and Carly were going at each other, where Nina was trying to tell her at first, about halfway through, that she was trying to give this to her to make up. And there was a moment when La Watro shifted her face that said, all right, I'm about to show you better than I can tell you. There was a moment where you saw, oh, I'm going to keep the Metro Court. I'm going to run it. I'm going to be all up in Olivia's business. You could just see the shift in her.
She got
with Olivia and she's like, not selling it. Mine, my hotel. I was like, yes. Yes.
And I hated that Sonny got on her and was like, you brought this on yourself. When she told him. She told him, because I'm like, Sonny, shut up. Carly did this. The person that Carly should be mad at is Michael's ass. Because, again, Carly is so hell-bent on foolishness. You're not seeing what Michael is doing. Michael is trying to take Sonny down. Y'all talk about family, family, family. Michael is trying to destroy the family. And that's another one that gets on my nerve. They keep bringing, Michael keeps bringing up, you cheated on mom. Why won't anybody bring up, well, you also cheated with Willow on your best friend when they were married? Nobody brings that up. I'm fucking sick and tired of Willow and Michael acting so self-righteous and sanctimonious.
At Wiley's birthday party,
Scott had said at that damn trial, well, you stripped your best friend's woman. Like, it's annoying. Like, I just feel as though some of these shows, they're all guilty of it. Every last one of them, Days included. Days is especially guilty of it, too. No, Days and Bold. They will harp on one person who is the bad guy, who is the, has the scarlet letter, but they will never bring up what the other party does. Yes, and, Nina fucks Sonny, but Michael slept with Willow, who was married to Chase. Like, come on. I don't understand it. And that whole ELQ falling out, this is why they, I don't understand. You mentioned Austin as a Q, and now what? What was the purpose of mentioning Austin was a Q? What was the purpose of mentioning that he was Jimmy Lee Holt's kid? Like, they're not doing anything with that. Like, GH is a little over the, like, they're a little kooky-booky for me.
Josh, what did you think of the fact that things are starting to close in on Esme a little bit?
I like it. It's finally, the story hasn't had any movement for months. Bitch. And it, I'm almost to the point where I don't care, but I'm glad it's moving. I think that the best part of the whole thing was Portia and Stella's conversation on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Who, I don't know who wrote that episode, who wrote that
to go
script,
back. I want to go Shannon Peace.
It was so well done, and they let them say what they should have let them say for a long time. This is because she was black. And she was easy, and she would have had a more difficult time at the criminal justice system than Jocelyn, who she supposedly hated the same. That was needed to be said. It was so well done. I think Brooke Kerr and Vernay Watson did such a great job in those scenes. And it just, it is, I'm so underwhelmed with so much of General Hospital that those scenes just brought me to life because they were so well done and so needed. So that's the movement I'm glad that I've seen.
Let's talk a little bit about Days. There was a lot that took place. Beyond Salem had its 5-episode run. The Mothership also had a blockbuster storyline. Josh, since you're the one who gets heart eyes about Days of Our Lives, what's a quick first impression of Beyond Salem before we dive in, and then I'll get Jillian's first impression, and then we'll dive in.
Beyond Salem was just sort of a gift, I felt like. It sounds like corny and stuff, but I thought the first chapter was fun and silly and funny, and I liked all of it. But the chapter 2 was, it just felt like a gift to old school fans. Like, I just was in my feelings with all of it. So we'll talk more, but that's my first impression.
Jillian, what was your quick take on it?
I felt like they were giving us Heaven Can Wait. That was totally Heaven Can Wait.
Oh, yeah.
And if people don't know what it is, Google is your best friend. It was, to me, this one was, it tugged at your heartstrings. The first one was like a little, you know, they wanted to be out of the box with things. They didn't want to be traditional. And they, you know, but at the same time, they wanted to get fans, old school fans, back into it who never watched Days. Well, now let me rephrase, who haven't been watching Days. It was sort of like a welcome home type thing, like a familiar feel. This one really did tug at your heartstrings, and this is why you fell in love with daytime, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Beyond Salem chapter 2, we had some surprises. We had Steve Burton as Harris Michaels, which we knew that Steve Burton was going to be on it, but we also had some other surprises. The story was that we're going after the Three Prisms, or that there is a search for the Three Prisms. It took us all over the globe, much like chapter 1 did. Jillian, last week on last week's podcast, the first episode had aired because we recorded on Monday. So we talked a little bit about John and Paul at Pride. So what's your quick take on the John and Paul dynamic, Pride, and then as the adventure takes off?
John need to hit the beat. Like, sir, I see you dancing at Pride, but you need to hit your beat. Like, I need y'all to catch the beat. I thought it was cool because you have alpha male John Black. I mean, John is a sensitive person, but he's still that male, that take charge guy. You know, I will rescue a damsel in distress, come hella high water. I could have a busted knee, a busted rib. I could be in my rocking chair and I'm going to rescue you. So you get that from John. But to see John Black just letting his hair down, being kicking it with his son at a Pride, especially somebody with John's, you know, back, like his resume, like I just said, I thought that was cool. I like that we got to check in with Paul. We've been missing Paul. We got to check in with Paul to see how Paul's doing. And Paul ain't hurting over them boring gays over in Salem. He said he good.
We got a lot more of Patch and Kayla's family. We got to see all three kids. Stephanie is back. Trip is back. And Joey is back. We got to see some family reunions. Pizza. Harris Michaels, after kidnapping John, shows up at Patch and Kayla's door delivering pizzas and does a flash bomb and kidnaps Patch. And so then we get John and Patch kidnapped and quickly brainwashed. Josh, we were off to the races. What did you think of Harris Michaels as that began to play out before we even get to the hope part?
I think there's some fast transport in Beyond Salem. Harris showed up at some doors with some quickness. I don't know. I just thought it was all kind of fun. I thought it was all very adventurous, old school days. And I liked seeing the Johnsons together. I think that the boys have a healthy rivalry already. They're sort of friends, but they're kind of a healthy rivalry. Happy to see Stephanie. It just warms my heart with things like Steve calling her Little Sweetness and her calling him Papa. It all felt very natural. It felt like I had seen them together before, even though I haven't seen them all three together before. I thought that stuff was really good. And the exploding pizza box, you know, and then we're off to the races. And where are Steve and John? Harris Michaels got in the back of the white child molester van. So it's like
like an old school, like 70s, like clip. What you were watching that van.
Yeah.
I was like, boy, I haven't seen one of those vans in a very long time. But boy, they were around a lot during Chips and some of those other shows back in the
day. Got to drive them to the fast transport so they can get to Caracas.
Right. Jillian, what did you think of Harris Michaels kidnapping John and Patch and his chemistry with Hope?
I mean, you keep saying, Josh, you saying that fast transport Seattle and San Francisco ain't that far from each other.
No, it's true. But I was thinking of Montreal, too. I just thought that I liked the way that he was like door, door, door.
I'm like, you know, I'm just going to suspend my disbelief that he was on a plane. And, you know, usually with soaps, if he is snatching them up, he would snatch them up. Then there would be like two, you know, it would be it'll be storyline B and storyline C filling in. So when storyline A comes back, he's in Montreal. So I'm like, yeah, I don't care.
Oh, yeah,
I thought that was cool. The chemistry with he and Hope. I guess I would need to see more of it. You felt forced. Like, you could tell, like, Hope wasn't feeling him, that he was just, like, you could tell it was, like, a job for Hope. I kind of do felt like he kind of did care for Hope, because when old girl said, you know, you gonna put a hole in her chest, and he's like, I can't do that at the wedding. Okay, fine, on the wedding night. You are, like, she was adamant, and he was trying to tap dance out of that. I felt like he did care for her, but, you know, it is what it is. Harris Michaels. I never watched when Harris Michaels was around. Heard he was a dick to Eve Donovan. Kind of wish they could have, that would have been kind of like, that would have been interesting if they had Eve Donovan back. You know, Charlotte Ross, what you doing these days, girl? That would have been
on Twitter.
You know, that's Twitter. I mean, what you look like on camera. It ain't no shade, but
it's true, though. You're right.
No shade. I'm just like filtered like a mug. But, you know, it would have been interesting if they had gotten Charlotte Ross back and she's like, hello, help. And she'd be like, ugh, you're with Harris, you nasty bitch. You like, that would have been funny. But, yeah, you know, whatever.
The biggest shocking moment maybe of Days of Our Lives Beyond Salem was the revelation that Megan Hathaway is still alive. Jillian, what'd you think?
I don't know, Megan Hathaway. I was online like, who the hell is this broad? I'm like, then they said that was Stefano's daughter. I'm like, damn. I'm like, Stefano just planting seed to seed. Like,
popping out kids.
Yes. Like, I need to make sure that your pappy is your pappy because, you know, Stefano, you never know. But they gave me a little history lessons on that. I thought that was good. They dug in from the crates from the history book. Ryan Kwan, I see you. You know, I thought that was cool that they used somebody from the history books that we don't know. Well, not we don't know, that we haven't heard about in a long time, and somebody connected to Bo and Hope, because Larry Welsh shocked the shit out of her ass. So that was cool.
Josh, what'd you think?
I liked it. You know, Megan Hathaway is kind of to Bo what Jan Spears is to Sean Douglas. And so it was kind
of... Not Jan Spears.
Well, kind of, actually.
I'm just joking.
I know.
Stop it.
I thought she was really, really good from jump. I thought she was sort of deliciously evil in that old school way. But that has a motivation, and her motivation, we will find out, is Bo. And I thought that just from the beginning, she suddenly seemed very Damara. She seemed, even though I had not seen this character, I had heard of this character, but I didn't know who she was. But she seemed very Damara from jump, and I enjoyed watching her play everybody like the puppet master. I thought it was kind of fun.
She basically ordered Harris Michaels to go through with his wedding to Hope quicker because they were trying to get their hands on the prism, and she wants all three prisms. We cut to Ben and Sierra having the confrontation, or we cut to Ben and Sierra arriving, seeing Hope, and Sierra confronting her mom about her absence. Now, Hope's absence from Salem has been something that has gone on for a very long time. It hasn't always been explained. It's just always been she's off gallivanting. What did you think of the confrontation? Do you think that it paid off in the way that you would hope it would if it had been on the main show, Josh?
I think it was needed. Absolutely. I liked the fact that Sierra was hesitant from the time she got there, and that when Hope had that baby and the baby starts crying, Sierra all but snatched that kid right out of Fancy Face's arms. She was not having any of it. And she was kind of talking back and going at it. I liked it. That was a good thing. The explanation, I'm not sure I still buy that Hope wouldn't have returned to come back for the birth of that child, but I get it. I get it. It's an explanation. It connects some dots. And since we couldn't have it on the main show, it had to happen on Beyond Salem, and I'm glad it did.
How'd it feel for you, Jillian?
I thought it was cool. I'm glad that they threw Sean in there, because Sean is going through it, bitch, Belle. I was glad, you know, the explanation that she first gave Sierra, and Sierra wasn't buying it, and she was like, I know she's lying to Ben when she told Ben, I know my mama lying. She's Bo's child. She's Bo's child. She knew her mama was full of it. And when she finally cracked and told them why, I was glad that she said that. You know, and Sierra was a little bit of a bitch to her when she was like, oh, let me get him. And she was like, he doesn't know you. I was like, Sierra, you such a bitch. I'm like, that, you bitch, you. Like, I enjoyed it. It was good to see that showdown happen.
I liked uncomfortable Ben trying to be funny and trying to play the go-between when things were getting tense. I thought that was written well, and I thought Robert Scott Wilson was kind of playful with it, where he was just like, I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to try to make everybody laugh and be nice. I kind of liked that in-between going on.
So Megan basically makes Harris Michaels go forward with the wedding, move it up. But in the meantime, we have been also been seeing Bo in heaven with Loretta Devine's character talking about and him watching everything that's transpiring with Hope and Ben and Sierra and Harris Michaels. Jillian, what did you think of Bo in heaven, Loretta Devine, and the connection even through time and space between Bo and Hope?
Language, Beauregard.
Ooh, that was a good impression, Jillian. Yeah,
you know, thank you, thank you. You know, I'm here on Saturdays. I thought those two played off of each other well. I cracked up because I said, even in heaven, Bo is still raising hell. He all cussing in there, son of a. I'm like, Bo, calm. I'm like, I was waiting for the Lord to zap him and be like, now look here, we ain't in that Brady pub now. Don't you disrespect my house, Bo. I like that Loretta Devine was trying to keep him in check. Like I told you, it was semi heaven can wait. Bo knows that something is wrong with his family. That's his gut. Even in heaven, even though he's not supposed to be watching them, he knows something isn't right with his family, and he is still trying to help them from beyond the grave. And I thought that was so sweet. Oh, no. See, Luke doing day by day. Fuck that shit. I'm sorry, but the heaven stuff was good. When Hope saw Zach, I said, why y'all try to make me cry? Oh, I'm like, my eyes are just sweating. Damn you. Dion Salem really was like a little love letter to the fans because, you know, isn't this Prism story rooted in history?
Absolutely it is.
They, like, you know, I see you, you know, Ryan Cron, shout out to you. You know, everybody gives credit, but people keep forgetting that Ryan Kwan is like a daze. He's a huge, you know, he was a huge, like how Mr. Carlovati was a huge One Life nerd when he was growing up. Ryan Kwan is a daze nerd. So yeah. I could smell it. I could smell it. This is your doing. I could smell that. This is some of your doing. Like I told y'all, I did not know who the hell. I was like, Megan Hathaway? She related to Berkshire Hathaway? Who are you? So I did a little digging and I'm like, this Prism shit really is. I'm like, she really did mess around with Bo. I was shocked. I did not know that because I've never heard. They never talk about him. And that is just so crazy how the Bradys and the Damaras are so intertwined and deeply connected. I thought this is a brilliant storyline to snatch from. I thought this was great. Yeah, like Sierra meeting Harris, that was my only caveat. Your mama man comes in and you're just sitting there with your in the smallest nightgowns. I don't know what the hell, like, that was my only thing. Girl, throw a shirt on or something. Throw your man big shirt on. Throw Ben should have tossed her a big shirt and say, here. She just sitting there and I'm like, you about to tumble out of that thing. That don't happen in my household. I'm like, y'all boys just do whatever. You Brady Horton Kariakasis just do whatever y'all want. That was just my caveat, but she is Bo's child. She was stank as hell with Harris. She was not cracking. Ben was trying to play nice, and she was like, mm-mm. And Bo was like, that's my girl.
Yep.
That's my girl. I love that. And the Johnson boys going to go find Steve. Thought that was cool. They need to change Tripp's name. What does he go by? Is he Johnson now, or he go by something else?
I think he's Johnson. I think he goes by Johnson now.
Okay. I like the Johnson boys, finding them. And the young lady that plays Wendy.
Yes.
Wendy Shin. I love her. I love the dressing down she gave them when she was like, "Ugh, you cis white men." Yes. And I'm like, who put that line in? Because thank you, that diversity. Thy name is Days. Gabby and Lee.
That was hot.
Woo! Listen, when he put up on that, I said, okay, all right. They were smoking hot. I need to see more of Lee Shin. I've always liked that young man that plays him.
Remington Hoffman.
Hoffman. What's his first name?
Remington Hoffman.
I'm about to call him Dominic Hoffman, but I'm thinking about somebody from a different world. My bad. Yes, he is a good find. I'm glad that they're playing him more. I like the fact that they are trying to take over Demira, and the sister is trying to show him, look, bitch, I ain't just a pretty face that could crunch some numbers. I'm one of the baddest. And she showed she was. She broke into the Johnson family home, the Johnson siblings' homes. I thought that was dope. But let's get to talking about more important things. Andrew Donovan.
Lou, what did you think about Andrew Donovan?
My thoughts on Beyond Salem 2 are not the same as everybody else's.
Here we go, bitch, go, because they didn't have Vivian. I bet you.
No, it wasn't that. I think that Beyond Salem 2 was a wonderful old school nod for Beau and Hope fans, Patch and Kayla fans. I think that the surprise with Megan Hathaway was wonderful. I spent the first two episodes trying to figure out what the plot of this one was, because unlike season one, where it was very straightforward, you had the Alamanian peacock, you understood what it all was. I spent half of the five episodes trying to figure out what the plot of this was and why these things were connected and how they were connected. And so I found this season to be disjointed by comparison. There wasn't the same story arc through lines. And it just sort of, to me, felt like more, rather than a puzzle where the pieces all fit, it sort of felt like everything was just sort of shifting around all the time, a little bit more Jell-O-like. I think that they did a lot of wonderful things. I mean, there's no denying that Beau and Hope, and listening to that music, oh my God, watching the flashbacks and seeing them dance and all that stuff,
they
that
got
was
money.
Amazing.
They played that music. I had a
yes,
moment.
Yes, they did.
When they played that music, this is how caught up I was. As I'm watching them, I'm all singing to it, and then I go, wait a minute, y'all are playing the original. Y'all got money. I'm like, they haven't done this in years.
You're like, shut it off. They're going to charge you for that.
I'm like, I guess they probably, listen, Peebo Bryson, it's Peebo who sing that song, right? It's not Jeffrey.
Roberta Flack and Peebo Bryson.
Right. Peebo need that money. No shade to Peebo, but listen, the last time I heard about Peebo, my heart broke because the IRS did a raid on house, honey. Yes. He lived in Atlanta. They did a raid on his house for back taxes, and they took his Grammy.
No.
And the TV, the news choppers was around watching it. Broke my heart. So Peebo ain't tripping. Roberta may be like, no, look at here, but Peebo is probably like, yes, yes, please. He need that money. Sorry.
Those panties.
He need them panties, but go ahead, Luke.
I thought that the Hong Kong stuff was fun. I thought that Paul and his spy caper as the next John, in a world where the ISA has, I always get the ISA and WSB mixed up, but like
they're
in,
the same, but they're pretty much the same.
They're the same, but like I want to make sure that I'm using them on the right shows. on a show where we have such a legacy of the ISA on Days, I love that Paul is sort of following in those footsteps, and I would love to see him become the next John Black ISA agent.
Agreed.
For the most part, I think that it was a solid one, but I definitely do not think that as a five episode narrative arc, this one to me felt much more disjointed. It did not feel like, how do I put this? Beyond Salem season one felt to me like an event. It was promoted as an event. It was written as an event. You understood the through lines and everything happened. Beyond Salem 2 was wonderful for everything that it gave fans, but it felt to me like five episodes of Days of Our Lives. It didn't feel like an event for me. But that's not saying it's bad. I just don't think it's as good as in terms of as a whole as Beyond Salem season.
And one. I can see what you're saying in terms of we have different opinions of this, but I can see what you're saying in terms of you knew going in the Alamanian Peacock was the through line in season one. You had to actually get into the episodes in season two to really understand what the through line was. You didn't know about Megan Hathaway until
the
beginning of the second episode. But yeah.
Based on the advertising for season two, I thought the through line of season two was Bo and Hope.
Because I feel as though they didn't want to give away too much because, to be honest, with Beyond Salem 1, in their promos, they gave a lot away.
And maybe that's a discussion for another podcast, what the difference is between how much do you spoil and how much do you save. I'm totally okay with spoiling the main narrative arc of a television event and saving surprises like guest appearances and having them pop up as surprises versus not understanding what the concept of the series is and then getting surprises. To me, I'm willing to sacrifice some if I get some surprises along the way, but as long as I understand it.
I feel as though, promotion, maybe. I think promotion this time around didn't want to spoil it. I don't know nothing. I'm just saying that for me, because when you sit back and think about chapter one, the first one, Beyond Salem, the inaugural one, the inaugurational one, it gave a lot away, like in promos. The different promos they did, they gave a lot away. But this one, they did what they were supposed to do, in my opinion, which was tease the big one. Peter Reckel was coming home after all these years. Kristen Alfonso, after chucking the deuce to the mothership, she's back. They're both back on there. And that's, they teased that to get the fans. That's what they were supposed to do. They didn't go into the prism, I feel as though, because it would have given a... Because for longtime viewers, I feel longtime viewers would have put the dots together and be like, prisms? Bo's back? Oh, wait. Megan Hathaway? That they would have...
Yeah, and all you would have had to have done is look up prisms.
Right.
And you would have found the Megan Hathaway surprise.
Right.
But would you have even had to have said prisms? Could you...
Yes!
Could you... No, well, what I'm saying is, in any type of movie trailer that you have, a lot of times... You can say three rival groups are pursuing this treasure, and you understand what's going on without giving the details. I feel like in the promos, you could have done whatever you want to call the prisms, a treasure, artifacts, whatever. You could have said
that. Yeah.
Well, no, but I'm just saying that type of verbiage, you don't have to give the exact details of the prisms.
I think they would have. They would have had to use prisms because in the first trailer, they kept saying Alamanian Peacock, Alamanian Peacock. So you knew they would have had to. I feel as though had they used prisms, you would have figured it out. But we going around Joe's house now. What was I going to say? We going around Joe's house.
Well,
but...
let's talk a little bit about Eileen Davidson. What did you think?
This lady right there. Oh, Eileen needs to get Emmys, flowers, candy, chocolate, all of it, because she slipped back into those roles like nothing happened. Like that was an everyday thing for her, and I adored it. It was cute that her husband was a part of it. No shade to her husband, but you need to let your missus give you a little bit of more acting lessons. That's just me. But I thought this was brilliant. I thought it was brilliant. And Sister Mary Moira came in with that ruler and beat the shit out of Thomas for shooting shit up. I'm like, this is friggin' amazing. I thought it was so cool. I thought it was cute. That is another throwback to Day's fans.
Josh, what did you think?
I loved it. And I loved that they had Phil reach up Lady in Red's dress and clearly felt something that wasn't, that he didn't expect there to be. And then the clothes came off and they put a big old bulge on Thomas when they took his clothes off. It was like, okay, then. I loved it. Yeah. I thought it was fun.
I ain't gonna lie. I thought, I was like, I did not know where they were going with that.
I didn't either.
Because they had just showed Harris Michaels, right?
Yep.
So I was like, did y'all get Steve Burton to be in drag? Oh my God.
Lord.
I was like, ooh, Steve Burton. Okay. But then when we saw that it was Thomas, I was like, oh shit. Okay. I did not know where they were going with that. Really did not. Because listen, like I said before, when you think wrong gonna turn left, wrong going right and going up the hill and around the mulberry bush. When you think he going right, he going downtown and across town. Like, he don't know where he's zigging and zagging. So I really was like, where are y'all going with this? But Eileen Davidson, can nobody say that chick don't work hard? Because she does. She puts her everything in it.
It's a good nod to history, too.
Yes.
When they were unfolding all of when this originally happened and they unfolded all of these different roles for Eileen Davidson, Thomas Banks, I believe, was one of the last roles that they and you were like, oh my God, where else are they going to go? And oh my God, okay, so it's Thomas Banks. I thought the Thomas Susan thing was good. It also kept Eileen Davidson in the Susan Thomas, in the Susan Thomas Mary Moira world, and still allowed you to understand that Kristen was in prison in Salem, so that you didn't get confused, because people were always, oh, Stacey's Kristen should be, but this was a different role. And so I thought it was a good thing to have, you know, that Stacey's in prison, you know, that they haven't had Eileen reading the paper about Kristen DiMera. When at the very beginning of the first episode, I thought her not playing Kristen was actually better.
Well, the big cliffhanger, the big reveal at the end of Beyond Salem season 2 was a cryogenics chamber open because the prisms have been acquired by Megan Hathaway. There is the DiMera Enterprises logo on the cryogenics chamber. The door opens after Megan leaves and we see Bo, Peter Reckle, and Bo's eyes open. Did you squeal,
John? Yeah.
Squealed.
I'm not gonna lie.
We both squealed.
I'm not gonna lie. When she kept saying that she wanted someone alive or whatever,
I was thinking it was Stefano.
Yes, I thought it was Stefano. I was like, oh, Lord, they're not gonna let Stefano rest, child. I said, wrong.
Yes, Stefano.
They're like, well, we all do, but you know. He got called home to glory. It ain't nothing we could do. But I really thought, oh God, who is Ron gonna have a Stefano now? Is it, and like, are they gonna go there and recast? Are they really gonna bite that bullet, that huge bullet, and recast? Are they gonna just show a silhouette? I'm like, what? Because this time I'm like, Lord Jesus, I do not want Brady thinking he's Stefano.
Well, considering considering Megan has brainwashed Patch, who already had Stefano in his brain at one point, I was like, boy.
That is why I said what I said, because I'm like, Ron may just turn on a dime and be like, Brady, Stefano. And I'm just like, oh, God, no, Jesus, don't do it. But when it was Bo, that was a twist I did not see coming. Did not. And his eyes opening, I screamed. And I'm like, he purposefully left the door open and be like, the ball's in your court, Peter. Like, the ball is literally in Peter's
absolutely
court now.
Absolutely. And the whole thing is set up for the third chapter, if that's where they want to go.
But that leads me to a question that I want to touch on quick before we get to the mothership. Should Bo and Hope's next story be a third chapter, or should they use the momentum for this reveal to help boost the mothership and bring them back to mothership?
They should do both. They can either launch season 3 and enter in on the mothership, or they can go to the mothership. And if they decide to leave it, or they want, or they're doing a caper that has them off screen on the mothership, because you know they cost money, they go to the mothership. I mean, they go to Peacock.
Josh, what about you? Because I just had a realization. This all may, whether or not it's on the mothership or on Peacock, may really depend on Christian Alfonso's previous statements.
Just to bring in, I listened to Michael Fairman did an interview with Ron last week, I believe. And in it, he asked about the origins of the second chapter, et cetera. And Ron said when he developed the overall story, the first person he pitched it to was Christian Alfonso, and because he needed her buy-in. And what it made me wonder when this ended and you see Bo open his eyes, is this half the story he pitched to Christian? Did he pitch this? Is there a second half that's already developed?
Or was
that
she
is
only on
how
board
Bo and Hope get to each other? So I didn't know what the story, like if this is the end of the story he pitched or if there's a whole other half.
And this is just my speculation, but it's entirely possible she may have been on board for a special event, but not returning to this. But this That's is how possible. We get Bo back potentially on the mothership. I don't know. I'm just saying there's any number of scenarios.
Sis did say, she said in an interview, it was with Dodgers, I never said I wasn't coming back. So.
Oh.
You hush it. We will just let that go because TV Line pulled a Michael Logan. Remember when Logan, when that damn Ellen lion ass Wheeler was like, oh, they made me do this. And he pulled out in the middle of this interview. Was like, she said, he pulled that out like dominoes. Bam. Like, you a lie. Like,
TV Line did that.
TV Line kind of did a little bit of that. We're not going to go beat around that bush. Time heals wounds. It seems like Kristen and the kids and them is cool. So let's just say they left the door open for both of them to come back. So you never know.
Well, what a wonderful segue to the topic that I've wanted to discuss since the beginning of the episode. What? But of course, I saved it for last. Sammy leaving the door open for Allison Sweeney to return yet again.
They've
2 days of our lives.
That, like,
I know, but that's I'm just
well,
using it as a segue.
Well, you know what? And they've also that's what Christian Alfonso said. See, you brought that up with your girl. She said she didn't want to come back and forth like other people.
Oh,
well, listen, y'all can take that out any way you will, but that's what she said. But you know, I got what she meant. So. Come back, but back to your girl, Sammy.
Lucas's chickens came home to roost this week when everyone found out that he is the one who kidnapped Sammy. Sammy and, well, first of all, Allison Sweeney and Brian DeTillo in those church scenes were heartbreaking. And as a fan who's watched them for so many years, you saw how comfortable they were with each other as actors. And it really...
Was it like comfort food for you? You like
it? It wasn't quite comfort food, but it was very enjoyable.
What is your comfort food? What is your comfort food? Spam a lot, ain't it?
No, it's mashed potatoes, of course.
They season.
They are country styled mashed potatoes.
They season
garlic and various other things added to them.
See, he didn't say they season.
I don't know what your definition of seasoning
they
is.
They season, Luke. Seasoning in there. See,
I consider garlic seasoning, but you may not.
At the DC potluck. No.
Reeling from the revelation, Sammy goes to the Demira mansion to tell EJ that he was right and admit it. And she catches him with Belle, who is all too happy to flaunt it in her face.
Fucking Belle.
I know. Josh, because of the fact that I was looking forward to whatever Sammy dealt out for Belle, and you put on Twitter, it's like, well, I guess we'll have an interesting podcast. I'm guessing you're going to take Belle's side in this.
I'm not going to take Belle's side in this because, no, but... I do think that one thing that Samantha Jean does when she is wrong.
You like to call her by her government, don't you?
As long as it doesn't end up in an SEO headline.
I promise no. One of the things that Samantha Jean does when she gets wronged, and she was wronged multiple times, is that she conveniently forgets that she has ever wronged anyone and acts like the ultimate victim and does a lot of teaching lessons that she's not, she should not
but
be teaching.
Here's the difference with that this time, though. This was intentional because she had, this time when she was wronged, Lucas actually brought up that stuff to her and she had a moment of pause where she was like, okay, I did those things that happened, but this is how it's different when she had the conversation with her and Lucas. And then when she went to EJ to admit, which once again shows character growth because Sammy doesn't admit she's wrong often. She went to EJ to admit that he was right and that she was wrong. And then Belle goes and throws it in her face. So the difference between Sammy in the past for what she's done and acted out, yes, a lot of times she's done that. But this time when she chose to go and do it, tell Sean about Belle and EJ, that was intent. She intended it.
I'm about to be Jillian here and say, if I had been allowed to finish.
Tell him, Josh.
No, I agree with you, Luke, because I was going to differentiate between Lucas and Belle. Because what I thought was so good about Lucas and Sammy was when Lucas said, I learned from you.
Right.
I thought that was really good and really well done.
The pause and the look on Sammy's face when he said that and she realized that he was right.
I thought that was
amazing.
Great. And I agree with you. Belle came out there and said, here I am. And all I could think was, while I think Belle was completely wrong, I'm not real sure Samantha Jean wouldn't have done the same thing, but because Belle and Sammy have such a sordid history, I kind of liked that Belle came out and threw her shoulders back and bowed up and said, and what? I slept with your man. I liked that rather than Belle cowering in the bathroom. It doesn't make Belle right. I just liked that it was that Belle came out and fought the fight. That was what I liked.
Sammy should have been something.
No fight. Belle was, no, sir, this is where we part the ways.
Part the ways, baby. Part the ways.
Belle fought the fight. She would have come out there and dragged Sammy. All she did was come out there and just be like, surprise, bitch. And Sammy cut her to the quick when she said, this is disgusting. And she told her, he only doing this to get back at me. And when EJ was like, we're going to talk in private, told Sammy, like a child that she is, told you so, like a child when she said that, I was like, Belle knows.
And when Sammy left and he chased after her and the conversation in the entry Belle knew with the moment he chased after her, Belle knew. And then that conversation, I want to give a shout out to Dan F because his and chemistry with Allison Sweeney, those two, even though he's new in the role, I felt EJ's
just be real. Dan, I don't care if Dan lied and say he didn't. I don't know if he has. I'm just saying in case he didn't. Dan studied up on James Scott.
I
believe it. Because one thing that EJ was good at with Sammy, even if he wasn't touching Sammy, he would seduce Sammy with his words.
Yep.
And that's eyes. What Dan tried. That's what Dan's EJ did. He tried to seduce Sammy with his words and with touch. And Sammy did not. He knows that's his old trick, his playbook to get Sammy to calm down and to be on his side. The fact that he couldn't do that, he knew, fuck, I'm in trouble. And he tried, he pulled out them bag of tricks. I said, oh, you really did bone up into this role. So when he was telling Sammy, you know, we can get back together. And, you know, I was like, boy, I can't believe he's saying this. I'm like, you still have her sister's funk on you. And you're trying to tell this woman, yo, we could get back together. That's how I knew. I'm like, this man is really EJ Tabera.
When she came back the next day and he was there and he thought that she had returned to him and she was like, you are not worth the powder it would take to blow up your life. I was like, well, fucking damn.
And the best part of that was how quiet Allison Sweeney played that.
Yes.
She didn't yell. She didn't scream. And the way it was shot, when she looked around the living room and said she was done and she walked out and they had left EJ there in silence and there were no words spoken, I thought it was so powerful.
He stumbled back on that chair because let's just be real. We know the shades of Sammy. We know Sammy goes from wronged, hurt, loving and nuclear. She gave another one. She gave the fifth one, and EJ is not used to that. Belle ain't used to that. That's ambivalent. She's just like, I'm over it. I'm done.
Well, because
we know when Sammy is wrong, she is going to tear the house down. The people, fuck the people next door. The people five counties next door is going to hear how this child is melted down. For her to just tell EJ, I am over you and Lucas, and I am tired.
When she said, I've spent the better part of two decades going between you two and I'm done, I was like,
damn. It was so good. Let me tell you
about that episode for me, right? Let's take it back to the church. Brian Nutillo and Sweeney, they always do their thing. This is why I said before many podcasts ago, Sammy was always the brains, Lucas was always the heavy. So for them to go into the history books and for Lucas to say, I learned from you. Sammy couldn't argue that fact. I did, like, when Sammy admitted, yeah, you're right. But when she flipped it on Lucas and said, but you were able to go home every night in your warm bed while I was in this busted, raggedy cot. While I was worried that I would never see my kids again, I would not see my parents. You were just in their face like nothing happened. That was like a knife. Like, because I'm thinking to myself, Sammy girl, like, you've done some things. And I'm sorry, Lumi fans, you have to be real. Lucas has done some things. I see people online saying, well, it was Kate. No, bitch. Lucas.
No. Mm-mm.
Lucas did his dirt. When Lucas set Sammy up, they're saying, oh, he did it in self-defense. Then why didn't Lucas take his ass to the Salem PD to say that? Lucas went happily along and used Kate as the scapegoat. I was protecting my mom. That means, you know, I would have to go to jail. And my mom, Lucas conveniently uses that trope. You can't have it both ways. Lucas is no innocent. Lucas happily went along. If it was so innocent, he would have took his ass to the courthouse and said what he said. Instead, he let Sammy get jabbed by the injection and go home and try to go. Well, she wasn't going home to glory. We know Sammy was going to tear up hell. Loretta Devine weren't going to kick it together. But Lucas is no innocent. So I felt that when Sammy was like, yeah, you did learn from me, because he did. But when she brought up all, like, how he just conveniently went home, and, you know, when she said to him, you didn't intend for me to get out. If I had just gotten Allie's phone, I would have still been there, wouldn't I? Lucas couldn't even rebound.
On that note, Jillian gets the final word on Sammy. I'm not having the final word on Sammy. We would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Jillian is at Jillian Bo, and Josh is at Dr. Joshua09. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye, y'all.
Later.